Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Take a trip down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as PSP rides again. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium with your hosts, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons.
Hey, I thought you guys had finally done it. I'm sitting here running through my mind what I'm going to say to kill this town.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Good evening, everybody. This is Mike Norris. Welcome to the January 20th, 2011 edition of Peach State Pandemonium. And I was beginning to wonder, but I have been joined by my co-host Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons. How you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
I'm doing well now. I just my boss can't take a joke, man. They're trying to kill me up here.
You guys still in the middle of that move?
We actually will move on the last weekend of March, but we're like 10 weeks away and things are starting to jump a little bit, so it's kind of crazy. Before we get started off with Bill and Joe and these other things we're going to do tonight, Scott Teal, who I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with, Scott is an author, a historian, and I would say an all-around nice guy, but I don't want to really stretch it too far. He has some of Nick Gulas's booking ledgers from Tennessee. He worked for Nick years ago. He did his program for him and did some different things for Nick. And, Jerry, you're going to find this interesting because I did. The week of December the 11th through the 16th, 1962, these are the towns that the Nashville, Tennessee office ran. On Monday night, they ran Birmingham, Alabama, Hopkinsville, Kentucky, Memphis, Tennessee, and Columbus, Mississippi. On Tuesday, Louisville, Kentucky, Johnson City, Tennessee, Blytheville, Arkansas, Dyersburg, Tennessee. On Wednesday, they ran Nashville, Tennessee, Bowling Green, Kentucky, Evansville, Indiana, Jackson, Tennessee. On Thursday, Lexington, Kentucky, Florence, Alabama, Anniston, Alabama, and Union City, Tennessee. Friday, Paducah, Kentucky, Huntsville, Alabama, Cleveland, Tennessee, Louisville, Kentucky TV, Knoxville, Tennessee, Glasgow, Kentucky, Tupelo, Mississippi. On Saturday, Nashville TV, Memphis TV, Chattanooga TV, Birmingham TV, Knoxville TV, Jonesboro, Arkansas, Selma, Alabama, Morristown, Tennessee, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Cowan, Tennessee, and Hantsville, Alabama.
Well, that either has been the greediest man that ever lived.
I mean, it's a lot of people don't realize that you know, Tennessee, from Memphis on the western end to Johnson City, Knoxville, that area on the eastern end, you know, that's 500-600 miles across there. I mean, so listen, it's no wonder Bill said you could be in a territory a year and not see somebody.
If those guys wasn't making money, then there was something wrong. I know my brother-in-law told me when I got in the business, he said, don't ever go to Tennessee, and I never did.
Oh.
Now I know why.
And can you imagine getting on the guy's bad side and him running you from one end of that state to the other day in, day out?
Well, I always heard you go in there in a $10,000 Cadillac back then and leave on a $200,000 Greyhound.
Yes, sir. Sort of like the old Oklahoma thing where they guaranteed you a new car. you couldn't afford it, but you're going to have to buy one to get home.
I thought that place was bad. I love the business, but I would not have done that. I wouldn't have done that.
Oh, but I thought that was very interesting.
You can't even believe what you just read.
I mean, it's just, you know.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you know, and I know. I mean, I've heard Gene Bennett tell the stories about having to, you know, they used to do Birmingham TV at 11 o'clock at night. 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday night. And he said, and he told me that you would get through there on Saturday night through with that TV. Now they didn't run Sundays back then, and they ran Birmingham on Monday nights. He said, and you know, if you were going to be working in Birmingham, that, you know, if they would tell you, you could just stay over. But he said they wouldn't tell you. They'd make you drive all the way back to Nashville to get your booking sheet on Monday morning. And he said then you'd find out you're in Birmingham, have to go right back down there.
You know what? That's not even fun. That's your control freak there.
That's exactly right.
I never met the man.
I was going to say, speaking of Gene Bennett, yesterday was his birthday.
Happy birthday, Gene Bennett.
I think he's just 2 or 3 days younger than Charlie Smith, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Me and Charlie Smith have appointed ourselves to his board of directors for the company he owns, and we're trying to help him run it. I don't know if we're going to be able to help him or not, but we're trying.
And one other thing I'd like to mention before we get Joe and Bill with us, a gentleman that, Jerry, I guess you were familiar with, I've yet to be able to find out his full name. All I know is Ring Inspector Chuck passed away just a few days ago.
Yeah,
he worked for you.
Yeah, he was mentally challenged, and we made Chuck feel important. And I took him. I mean, he come from a nice family, and he was, you know, he started coming by OCM, and we got that started. So when I started running, we kind of made Chuck feel he was a part of it and wanted, and he weighed 319 pounds, and I took him from 319 pounds to 174 pounds.
Goodness.
Yep.
Well, I'm on my way to Savannah. As soon as this show's over with, I'm coming.
You
can do that.
I mean, of course, he had to do it, but, I mean, I pushed him, and, you know, my brother-in-law always said that his dad was an atheist, Milo. And I talked to Milo about 4 months before he passed away, and he was 95, and a lot of guys know the history of Milo, and a lot of them don't, you know. But he told me, he said, now, this is a man that was supposedly an atheist. He said, you know, he said, I've read the Bible many, many times. This man's 95 years old. 4 months before he passed away, he said, God gave me this body, and I took care of it for him all those years. He said, you know your body is a temple. I said, you're right. And that's how he lived his life with his, you know, he made his living with his body, and he was the world's strongest man, and it goes on and on with him, but even I got pictures of him at 95 still working out. And for a man supposed to have been an atheist, wouldn't have made those statements. And he took care of himself because he went in the ground. But yeah, Chuck, you know, he was kind of mentally challenged, but he enjoyed it. And I mean, it was his life. It was his life. And, you know, instead of turning him out, and we made him a part. We made him think he inspected the ring before the matches started. And that, I mean, and we had a ramp that come out of the ceiling, kind of out of a wall that you come down to the ring. And I told him when he got down to 175, I let him walk down that ramp. And we had the house was full that night. I forgot what was going on, but it was packed. And I said, Chuck, this Saturday night will be your night. And you would have actually thought he was walking down the ring to Madison Square Garden. I mean, it was just, and it was, you know, it was a good thing we did. And I hated that he passed away.
And it didn't cost you a dime, did it?
Bobby,
I just that's the thing that I try to tell people. It don't cost you a dime to be nice to folks.
I got more out of it than he did.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
And his sister come to me and she said, "You've done more with him than anybody could have ever done with him." She said nobody in the family could do anything with him about his weight and all. He just kind of like, I guess, looked up to me and listened to me, and we'd go out there every day and work out. And he'd do what he could do. You know, he was so heavy, he couldn't do a whole lot, but he would do what he could do. But his heart just gave out on him. You know, he gained his weight back after I left, and, you know, the people didn't have the spunk enough to, you know, kind of man up and tell Chuck he needed to keep that weight off. But like you said, Bobby, it didn't cost me a dime, and I was as proud of him as he was himself.
Yeah, it's amazing with me. Sometimes I go to visit somebody in the hospital, or I go somewhere to try to cheer somebody up that's going through and it's amazing. 9 times out of 10, when I leave, they've done more for me than I could ever do for them.
Isn't that something?
That's just, it's amazing.
If you just knew you could help more people like that, it would be so gratifying through your walk through this life to, help people, Usually it's the other way around, but I appreciate you mentioning him, Mike.
Not a problem. He seems to be, from what I've gathered on the internet, he was real well thought of. And,
everybody loved him. You know, he, like I said, he had some issues, but it was okay.
Good. I'm glad to be able to mention that. Well, let me get our two guests on for their final evening with us, at least for now. Bill Bowman and Joe Turner, so let me get them on the air. Mr. Bowman, you with us?
I'm here, thank you.
That's good. Let me get Joe on here. Joe, you there?
Yeah. Did you say final evening because of Bill's age or anything?
We figured since y'all spent so much time in Tennessee, you needed time to recoup from all those miles that Bobby just ran off.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys heard the Bobby read off the itinerary for a week in December 1962 for the Gula's Wells territory out of Nashville. And what was that, about 30 cities, Bobby, in a week?
Something like that, yeah.
More than that.
Maybe more than that, counting the TVs.
I just can't imagine it.
I know I can't. I don't know if you'll experience that kind of runs up there or not, but my gosh.
Yes, sir, yep. We did. Can I tell you about a Saturday to give you an idea of when they started featuring Joe and I? We would leave Nashville about 6 o'clock in the morning or before and drive straight through to Memphis. To Memphis TV, wrestle on Memphis TV. It was about 9:30 or 10 o'clock on Saturday mornings. We'd jump right back in the car. He'd head right straight back to Nashville. In Nashville, then they were doing it in the early afternoon, 1:30, 2 o'clock. We'd get in almost time of the closing of the show. Do a little interview, jump back in the car, and head straight to Chattanooga. Chattanooga was an hour ahead, and we'd do Chattanooga TV. And then after Chattanooga TV, we would head south. We would make a spot in Anniston, Alabama, or somewhere along there, first or second match, and then drive straight through to Birmingham TV. Birmingham TV went from 11 to 12:30. Through Birmingham TV, get back in the car, and drive straight back to Nashville. And the next day, we spent at the Lazy Susan restaurant. That was a Saturday when they were featured. And you talking about dead, you were dead.
I can't even imagine that.
But that is some of the trips that we had the pleasure of making. It was
you wore me. I tell me that story.
You know,
it wore me. I just listened to that story.
I don't think I'm ever going to complain about having to rush from Atlanta TV to Columbus TV ever again.
I don't think you should.
Yeah, but you guys have to remember, they were farting through silk.
Yes, sir.
So we sure were.
Bill and Joe, really, I mean, on a hard week, mile-wise, what would y'all do? I know I did 3,000 in Louisiana for watch a week.
Yeah. We've done 3,000. We've done around 3,000.
Around
3,500, you know. Go ahead, Bill.
I put 135,000 miles on my little Mustang, usually per year, when working up in the Tennessee Territory. I would have to do a valve job on it every year.
When you got rid of that car, you couldn't put a pack of cigarettes under the bumper. It was dragging the ground. One time, Pippi was, and them broke down, and Bill was riding. I wasn't with him that night, but they broke down, so they had to get in that Mustang with Bill. So Pippi kept messing Bill, slapping him on the back of the head. He had his girlfriend with him, and they were sitting in the back of that Mustang with their heads humped up against the roof. They were so small back there. And Bill kept on saying, "All right, keep it up." And he kept on slapping him on the back of the head. And Bill pulled out a little blank pistol and shot it like you could shoot him. I think his girlfriend washed his legs and everything for him. I think she wet all over herself.
We put a lot of miles on cars. And I ended up, when I left the territory, I left in the Buick. But I drove that Mustang into the ground. It had about 19,000 miles on it when we first went there. We put some miles on
it. I've never heard change like that, ever in my life, ever. Have I ever heard anything that wow.
Yep.
Yeah. But we still had a good time.
You're talking about on a Saturday, y'all would do what?
2,000 miles.
Yeah, and the time when we get in on Friday night, you know, after going to the towns and, of course, having a little party afterwards and all that, we can get to bed at 2 o'clock. So we're riding rum dumb, yeah.
I can't even imagine.
One time I went to Memphis, and I was married then. I took my wife with me, and on the way back, I was so sleepy that morning. And I'm coming up that night, in Memphis. I'm sorry, I got the days mixed up here. It was during the week, and I was so sleepy. And we was coming back, and I come up behind a trailer truck. And we're doing about 80 miles an hour, and the trailer truck I was behind moved over to the passing lane. And what I didn't know was there was a tractor up front pulling a tractor backwards. And when that trailer truck moved out of the way, and I'm looking at headlights and another truck, I tore that interstate up. I hit the shoulders and everything.
Well, how many guys were in that territory? 100?
More than that. But see, they had a lot of people that lived, you know, in the area, that lived in Birmingham or lived in Nashville, whatever. Then a lot of the transit people like ourselves. The booking office was something else.
Imagine booking a territory like that. I mean, really, now, stop and just think about that. How would you do it?
Well, they had Lynn Rossi helped and Fargo helped and Nick and Roy, they helped. And it was just a team. But how they put it together, who knows how they put it together.
I think they had a bunch of darts. With all our names up on the wall, to be honest with you.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. Well,
it's quite an operation.
It was quite an operation. In that office there, they had masks, any color mask, M-A-S-K, that you want, any color outfits that you want. They had boxing gloves for any type of matches, boxing gloves, helmets. They had everything. And just figuring out all the tapes were something else. All those cities that I said a little while ago that we appeared in, they were featuring us, and they would do those tapes, and all those tapes would come back to that office, and then they'd send them out to different towns and figure out the booking for if you were shot an angle for where you were going to be next. And it was a circus.
I can't even imagine bicycling those tapes around. I mean, I can't even fathom that.
Yep. It was something else. We even went up at your part, up in Missouri, in the St. Louis, and wrestled, too. We wrestled on the TV station in St. Louis at the Chase Park Plaza.
That's it. Hardest ring in the world.
And
you ain't kidding.
There. Yes, really.
I took a bump in that ring. I took a bump in that ring, and the referee come over there and said, "Yo, get up." And I says, "Not till you tell me if it's signaling around there or not. I'm not getting up." It knocks the breath out of me.
You know what? That St. Louis, what a town that was. And even at the Kiel, I don't know if y'all ever wrestled in there, they had a 24-foot boxing ring, a town that was... You could snatch a head off of somebody, and they just come out of their seats. It was a great wrestling town. And for a town to be that strong, to have a ring like they had for TV and in the house show, I never understood that.
I didn't either.
The promoters believed it.
So the boys.
Yeah, you take a bump in that, you remember for the rest of your life. They had a ring in New Orleans one time when Lee Fields was running Louisiana, and in a town one night they didn't have the wrestling ring there, so they used this boxing ring, and that had so much metal underneath it for bracing, and went back and forth, you know, and when they got through with it, the next week they told them I couldn't use it anymore. They bent the ring up. I thought, gee whiz, that's a relief to the boys anyhow.
Oh, it's, oh, gosh. Yeah. Do y'all have any knee problems or hip problems? Or?
Well, I got all kind of problems. I do.
He didn't say head, you know, Joe.
Hey, not really. I mean, you know, between all the bumps, I've been in 19 car wrecks. 9 of them was total. And one of them was a head-on collision. And one of them, I was with Lucky Roberts and Billy Hines, and we was going up to Lexington, North Carolina. We were sitting on the shoulders of the interstate. And we stopped under this bridge to go behind the pillar to take a leak. And this trailer truck saw our tail lights, and he was peeled up, and he was doing 85 miles an hour, and he thought we was another lane. And he run slap over us when we got back in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And... so anyway, we had some rough times out there.
But
and
you know what? Go ahead.
And the injuries were quite a bit, you know, in the business. You had to just bite your lip and go on, you know. It's just but one of them things you done.
It's just a wonder more guys didn't lose their life up in Tennessee, you know, with those kind of miles.
Oh, yeah. But,
I mean, it's
you know,
a blessing. More guys didn't die on the road.
Yeah. Well, some people ask me now, I said, "Do you ever get hurt in the ring?" And I said, "Hell, I'm still hurting."
Thank you.
Yeah.
They don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't understand.
Well, we've talked about this before. You know, nowadays, if the guys get a little strained muscle or something, they'll take 3 weeks off. Back in the days we're talking about now, if you got hurt, you didn't open your mouth because you're just afraid somebody'd get you spot.
That's for sure.
You just kept right on going.
Yeah.
You had to. You had to make a living.
Exactly.
That right. There was nothing about them. To this day, my knees are both messed up. They both need replacing. But I'm too old to get them replaced. So I say, to hell with them. I keep on going. I've been hit in the head so many times, I'm goofy. I've always been goofy, but I'm goofier.
That happened when you was a kid? Because you're pretty goofy when I met you. I'm just kidding, Bill.
Oh, I know. I just consider the source and go on.
The last week we talked about you guys, your time in down here in the Gulf Coast in 68. Now, when you left here, you went back to Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Now, Joe, you came back here for a while in 69 is under the hood as the Black Hand. Bill, what were you doing at that time? Were you still in Tennessee as a solo?
No, I was in Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah, we worked on a different area for a while.
Yeah, because you were back in here again in late 70, Joe, as the just one of the interns. And Joe was the City of Mobile champion at one time.
Yeah.
You remember that? You remember?
Yeah.
Got a picture of you somewhere holding. Well, you got the Mobile trophy in one hand and your mask in the other, because you unmasked yourself that night.
I know this. Y'all probably know more about me than I remember about my own self, but do y'all know anything about me being in Oklahoma Territory?
When was that?
I went up there, and I forgot the year, but Dennis Condry and I went up there, and we were wrestling with Fitzo and Dante. We was in that area for a while.
That was what, mid to late 70s, wasn't it?
I would think so,
When did Dennis start?
I couldn't tell you exactly where he started, because I took him up and down the road with me all the time. And, he was my brother-in-law.
Right.
And I took him up and down the road and slowly broke him into the business. And sometimes he'd get aggravated with me because he told me I was an encyclopedia, that I thought I knew everything. And one day he asked me something, and I says, "Well, I don't know, Dennis." He says, "The encyclopedia don't know something?" And he went off on me with that one. But anyway, he got started in actually Charlotte, North Carolina, because I became ill and I was supposed to have been in this town that I went to. But what happened, I got a stomach blockage and I stopped in two hospitals going up there in my motor home, and they kept giving me morphine shots to ease the pain. I could just swallow or spit and I'd throw up. And so when we got up there, I went to that hospital there, and that doctor told me, he said, "You're not going to be wrestling tonight." And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "No." He said, "I'm the doctor, and I'm going to be there. And if I see you in that ring, I'm going to see that you don't wrestle." And so I got there, and sure enough, I wasn't able to. So they asked me, "Well, what can we do?" I said, "Put Dennis out there." And that's where he started, right there that night. But anyway, getting back to Bill and I, Bill stayed in Georgia a long time after we went different ways there.
You turn it off.
And then he ended up down in Florida, which a lot of guys, they love to be in Florida, where the sand is cool.
Well, let me tell you, that Florida was a grind.
Yes, sir.
It was a
time. But did you ever, going across Florida there, did you ever get to that Four Corners?
Four Corners?
Yes, it's a restaurant cutting across going to Miami, I think it was.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so a lot of the boys stopped there, and they had, that place had so many gimmicks in it. It had spiders
Yeehaw
on
Junction.
The string. Huh?
It was Yeehaw Junction.
Is that what it was? Oh, okay, yeah. I thought it was Four Corner. But anyway, they had spiders hanging from strings. You'd be sitting there eating and a spider dropped down on you. And the women's restroom, they had a dummy sitting on a stool in there, and the women go in there and use the restroom, and they had a thing made the dummy move. And it was a male dummy, you know, in the women's restroom. And those, I think it's Sputnik Monroe, got there one time, and he told Bill, he says, sometimes the officer call you here, and they got a phone back there behind the cash register, and the officer call them when you get here if they have any messages for you. And sure enough, the phone rang, and they went up there, and they said, they asked for Bill. They said that Bill was for the phone was for Bill. And Bill went up there to get it, and that thing squirt water like a water hose out on you. Just filled him full of water. You remember that, Bill?
Yes, sir. The name of that place. Do you remember, Mr. Oates? It was called Yeehaw Junction.
Yes, sir.
You know, so when you're going to West Palm and going down that way,
right,
you would go through it. It was quite a place. It had they used toilet paper for napkins and all kinds. These two old ladies were ex-carnies, and they just did everything that would you know. And they loved the wrestlers, and the wrestlers loved stopping there and getting the coffee and the pecan pie and that thing. We had all kind of stops like that all across the country, which we enjoyed. The miles, you got to where you just look forward to stopping at one of those places that you knew about. The miles, I don't know, they kind of took care of themselves. But
yes, they did.
We just went along with it, and that's all.
Bobby, did I ever tell you the story about when we was going from getting off the ferry and coming in Dyersburg, Tennessee? About the cross?
No.
But you appreciate this, being a minister, and I'm going to tell you. We got off the ferry, the thing off the Mississippi River there, and there's a lot of bottom land out there, so it was flat. We drove this thing quite a few times, and we was coming back toward Dyersburg in that flat bottom land, and on that road, we always thought it was just a straight road, but you know how a road will turn sometimes, you don't pay much attention to it. It's so long and narrow and flat. So we riding, we get back off the ferry there, and we riding along there, and it got real foggy. You couldn't see anything, and we were trying to watch the road and keep the stay on it. And we figured we were getting back close to Dyersburg, but all of a sudden we saw a cross up in the sky. And it was lit up, and that thing was floating around in the sky. It floated from one side of the road, then the other side. And me and Bill were fixing them, started confessing everything, buddy. And anyway, we rode along there, and what it was, it scared the devil out of us, but what it was, there's a little mountain there just as you come in Dyersburg, and it had a cross up on it. And that fog, it was lit up, and that fog made it look like it was floating around. But we didn't know what it was.
You know what, Bobby?
What's that?
I was so scared, I stopped the car, and the car started pressing, and it was just... It was that bad.
Yeah, it's scary.
Well, you guys got back together in Georgia, and how long were you guys with the Atlanta office before the split happened?
I don't remember, Bill, do you?
Oh, probably about 6 months.
Yeah, that's a good guess, probably.
Right about 6 months. On the night that they split, we did not know anything about it. In fact, that Saturday we did a thing on TV with Roberto Soto, with one of the Welch boys. Then went to, I believe it was
Carrollton.
Carrollton, and then after that we came back. And Ann and I and my son and another kid, we caught a plane and went to Disney World. We went down to Disney World, and then we came back on Monday, and I went into the wrestling office on Monday to get my check. And here's Lester sitting there. He says, "Are you going with us, or what are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know what you're talking about, Lester." He said, "Well, are you and Joe going to go down to Florida, or what are y'all going to do?" I said, "We didn't know we were asked to leave." He said, "Y'all know about the split, don't you?" And I didn't know a thing about the split. And then I guess Joe came in a little bit later and found out about it also. And then that's how we found out about the split. We wasn't cut in on anything. And then we went to the new offices of that she had. And that's what we know about the split.
What made you decide to go with Ann as opposed to staying with the Georgia office? Well, the NWA office, I should say.
Well, we just didn't.
I don't think we were sure which way to go.
Yeah, really. We just didn't like pulling up our socks and moving again real quick. And that was one of the reasons we stayed. And Tom laid out a good story to us, too. They were going to take care of us and blah, blah, blah. And then we were going to go nationally with the Channel 17 TV. And he laid a story on us, too.
Now, I always heard they locked her out. Is that the truth?
Do what now?
They locked her
out. They locked Dean Gunkel out. Yeah, that's true. That's what I heard, too. But see, here's the story on that, too. We were told, that Ray Gunkel told her, says, "If anything ever happens to me, you make sure you go to that office and sit at that desk." And that's the story she said one time.
Well, I don't know how they did what they did to her. I mean, I really don't.
Yeah. I don't either. I just wished I hadn't been caught up in it myself. But
I know it was an absolute mess.
Yes, it was.
It really screwed Joe and I up because all over the country they said we couldn't, go anywhere because of the NWA, blah, blah, blah. But we could have gone. In fact, we did go. We left there after a certain length of time and went up into the Charlotte territory. Before we came to Georgia, we were supposed to be going to the West Coast to work out there in Washington. We were going to take the places. What was the name? Norman Charles and what was their name?
Jonathan Boyd. Jonathan
Kangaroo.
Boyd.
Yeah.
The Kangaroos, Royal Kangaroos.
We were supposed to take their place out in Washington, D.C., and they were coming in. They came into Charlotte territory. They took our slot. And so but Tom talked us in to coming to Georgia back then. And so we came to Georgia. And we just didn't like move. My little boy was just getting school age, and it meant moving again. So I listened to my wife and should have had my, whatever. But that just happened. It cost me everything I had.
It happened overnight.
Yep, by staying there. Now, Jerry, where did you go then?
I was booked back in there before the split, and then when the split happened, it was like Gunkel died on a Tuesday here in Savannah, and I started like the next week And I got caught up in the middle of all this stuff because of me being from Columbus and Fred Ward there and my father-in-law promoting here in Savannah. He went with Gunkel and them for like a week or two or something like that. And here I am caught up in the middle. And then Ted's book behind me coming. We was over there for Bill Golden. So he was coming in behind me. And then they got to me and, you know, you need to go back, you know, go with the Georgia office, you know, the original, you know, I guess the original office or whatever you want to call it, not Ann. And so I made a couple of shots for Ann, and then I left there.
Yeah.
But it worked out good for me because they, went, especially when Ted went to work, you know, with Gunkel, it benefited me. And then I got ready to leave after all that and after all that happened. And I got out of there. And then Harley ran into Ted at TV, Atlanta TV. We were first. And then they, Gunkel come in behind us. And he got him out of there, too. So before it folded, he knew it was going in, you know.
Yeah.
But it was. I mean, it was a good thing. It was a strong thing for both sides for a while. And I guess Gunkel, you know, toward the end had a harder time getting talent. But a lot of boys got caught up in the middle, which was wrong. I think it was wrong anyhow. The boys were innocent bystanders.
That's true. I believe that.
I'll always believe that. And it was, I mean, for them to have done that, that woman like that, you know, they could have worked something out. I don't know particulars. And, you know, Eddie Graham hemmed me up one night in Atlanta, and you know, you did the right thing, and you know, I want you to come to Florida when you leave here, and all that stuff. You know, it was just a mess. But we used to run Augusta on Monday, and so did Gunkel, and Ted and I both lived in Clemson. We'd ride to Augusta together. I'd drop him off and then go wrestle at the bell and go back and pick him up. We'd go home. I mean, what was we supposed to do, you know?
Yeah.
But Ted, you know, he hadn't been in the business long, and he got hooked up with him. You know, Tom put him with Cowan, and they had that great run there, and Ted really learned the business. And so it's good for some guys and bad for others, I guess. You know? It's probably bad for more guys than good for some guys.
Yep.
Tom Renesto, you know, Wayne Cowan, Tom used to rib him so bad. And when he started in business, and they was going somewhere, and they was going through a toll booth. And Tom and Wayne was driving, and Tom, he kept telling him, get your money ready, coming up that toll booth. And he said, you got to have the right change now. Make sure you got the right change. Just kept on him. And so he says, now, don't put it in there until I tell you to, because Wayne said he didn't know how to do that. He never done it. And so he had Wayne Collins so nervous. The time we got up there, he said, wait a minute now, don't throw it yet. Don't throw it. Not throw it. He threw it and went all over the ground. Didn't even go in there.
That was Tom.
Yeah, that was Tom. That's where he ribbed. You know, there in Atlanta, we was outdoor show one time in the stadium, and I had a Kawasaki motorcycle, and it didn't have an electric starter on there. And he come over there when I was trying to start that thing, and you had to push the choke on and kick it once or twice, and then it'd start. And I'm over there trying to start that thing, and he's over there so, looking at it like he's studying, and said, no electric starter, huh? I said, no. And he said, everybody's got an electric starter. And he just started that routine. And the next thing you know, I forgot to turn the choke off. Now my motorcycle wouldn't start. And he's standing there gigging me about it, you know. So he was good at ribbing now.
Yeah, there was a reason we referred to him as Old Silver Tongue.
Yeah.
Bobby's got a good story about him, about Tom and the telephone booth at
that's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. Remember the old wood phone booth guys that used to sit in the sports arena? There's a big old wooden telephone booth there.
I remember it.
I was sitting in the office one day with Charlie Harbin. I might have been 15. I was sitting there, and Renesto comes in. And, you know, Tom wore a suit, and, you know, when he wasn't, you know, if you didn't know he was a wrestler, you'd have thought he was an attorney or something. You know, he toted a briefcase. And he come walking in the office, and he come in the ticket office, which was unusual, and I was sitting there, and he just set the briefcase upon the table, and he opened it up, and he pulled out a can of mace. And he closed the briefcase, and he reached over and picked the phone up, and he dialed the phone number to that telephone booth. Well, they had a crew of about 10, 15 guys, young guys that cleaned that arena up. And when that phone would ring, you could hear them running. They'd run from every part of that building trying to get there first so they could answer that phone. And they'd get up there and they'd fight, pulling and tugging on each other, trying to get in that phone booth to answer the phone. So just as they get to the phone booth and they get in there fighting over it, Tom hangs up. So the phone was ringing, so they all fussing, you know, that could have been my girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. They go back down. Tom let them get down out of the way, and he went out there and he took that mace and filled that phone booth up full of that mace and closed the door. And he went back in the office and he dialed that number again. And they come back up there, same scenario, man. They're pulling on each other, and two or three of them trying to get through the door at one time. And that mace hit them, and it looked like a scene from one of these TV shows where a bomb has went off. They was laid out all over the floor and over the counters, and they're coughing, gagging. And when they finally got through, when it all was said and done, they blamed everybody in the building except Renesto. They said, Mr. Tom wouldn't do nothing like that.
I heard that. Did they ever tell y'all a story about the mace and Cora Combs in Bristol, Tennessee?
Let's hear it.
Got out there, huh? She wrestled up there, and she was out there in a match probably lasted about 15 minutes. And there's a guy jumps in the ring when she just got through with her match, and she was a heel. And when she got through with the match, he jumped in the ring, looked like Hulk Hogan, man. He's a bodybuilder. He ripped his shirt off and everything, told he'd go kick her butt. So anyway, she said, well, hold on a minute. I just fought for 15 minutes. Give me a chance to catch my breath. And she said, I'll be back in a minute. So that guy's standing out there in the ring in front of all them people with his shirt off, waiting for her to come back. So she gets in the dressing room. She says, well, what in the heck am I going to do? Says, man, that guy squashed me. And I said, well, I don't know myself. And about that time, this policeman walked in there. And that's when that policeman just started carrying that mace. And he had some strapped on his belt there. And I asked him, I said, sir, can I ask you a question? I said, if you sprayed that mace in your hand and closed your hand up, would it keep its effect until you put it in somebody's face? And he said, well, I think it would. I said, you mind if we use that? And of course, what are we going to do? I said, I'm going to spray it in your hand. You close your hand up, and you're going out there and just rubbing that guy's face. And I said, he'll be riding run from you. And so she did. She went out there and jumped up in the ring with that mace in her hand, rubbed it in his face, and so he started trying to get away from her because the mace was in his eyes and everything, you know. And he's running around the ring trying to get away from her. She's kicking him in the butt, hollering out, I thought you wanted to fight. Yeah. I could just imagine he had to move from that state to another state after that. You know.
That could have been Hogan. That might have been where he was from.
Might have been. And Hogan from Tennessee?
Mm. He was from, I think
he's
from
Florida.
Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. That show Hogan Knows Best thing, man, that freaked me out. Speaking of Hogan.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
He knows best. He's trying to get in his daughter's pants all the time.
Looks the way, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
he's now doing commercials for Rent-A-Center with Troy Aikman, and I know Troy Aikman's probably what, 6'2", 6'3", so that means Hulk has shrunk.
because I'm 6'5", and when he first was working up here with Fuller, and, you know, I'd see him all the time and stand around and talk to him, and he was a good 2 or 3 inches taller than me. But he stands up next to Troy Aikman in those commercials now, and he looks an inch or two shorter than Troy Aikman. So
he don't look a whole lot bigger, Aikman.
So maybe somebody just finally beat the crap out of him, and that's all that's left.
Yeah, it might be.
You know, as we tell all these old stories and these trips and things, and it's just too bad that we don't record them, put them in a book or something. People wouldn't believe it, I know it. But it just, things that we've done and up and down the road, you just can't believe it all.
Well,
I'm going to tell you all.
Go ahead.
Do I have time to tell a quick story about Louisiana?
Oh, yeah. We've got 10 minutes left.
Okay. Well, when I first went to Louisiana, Adrian Bellajohn was the big wheel over there. And they didn't have TV in New Orleans. Now, they had it in Lafayette and Baton Rouge, but they didn't have it in New Orleans. So, anyway, they were trying to get New Orleans back on the air, and so they signed a deal with Barnett up in, excuse me, he was in Indianapolis, and the Bruiser and the other guy. So anyway, 2 weeks before they're supposed to start TV, they want to do some promotions. So Adrian Bellajohn, he was a strong man. So on the TV, he pulled a streetcar down Canal Street. And that got in the paper, and then was talking about wrestling and so on. And then they had Happy Humphrey there with, I think the guy that went with him all the time then was Sailor Judo Jack Terry. He was his front man. So they were going to have the big guy in the territory and have him in New Orleans. Well, that didn't mean a thing in New Orleans because you had to have TV to do. So the big guy said, I'll do something. So he was big then, and he went to the Sanger Theater right on Canal Street, and he went in and started watching the movie. And he watched the movie, and the movie got through, and he stuck himself in the chair, in the seats inside. And then he started screaming. He couldn't get out of the chair, the theater chair. And so they tried to quiet him down, and finally they called the fire department, the police department. They had to take both sections of those seats out to get him out. And naturally, the newspaper, the New Orleans State's item and the other were right there on the scene, and they saw all the pictures, what was going on, and made TV came, Channel 6 there. And guess what happened to the house that night? It jumped. Because there, he did that little angle by getting stuck in the theater. But that's the kind of things that were done throughout the years in the wrestling business. Those are things that ought to be known about. And that's some of the things I got to see and enjoy through the years. I just wanted to tell that story.
Well, that's a story.
Was that Humphrey? I know Judo Jack Terry was with Haystack Calhoun. He was,
that's
he was the one that got him started.
Haystack, yeah.
I know when I first met Klondike Bill, he told me something which I didn't do, which I should have done. He said, you need to get an 8x10 picture of every guy you meet in this business. I mean, those guys I don't even remember now, and I'm sure you guys are the same way. Crossed your paths that you couldn't remember to save your life.
Yep.
Well, that's just like things like Joe Louis and people like that being there.
Yep.
People running over taking pictures, the guys, you know, with him and all that, and thinking, why are they bothered? You know,
I didn't either, and I kicked myself. I was sitting right beside him in Columbus, Georgia, dressing, and I was in awe of him. And some guys were taking pictures with him. I didn't. Jersey Joe Walcott didn't have any pictures. Never had my picture made with Andre. You know, I mean, stupid stuff. You know, you look back and you say, what was wrong with you? You know?
Yep. But you guys worked a match in Dothan that Lewis refereed. Which one of you took his punch? Because I know that's how they ended every match with him. He punched one of the heels.
I don't remember.
But must have been you then. He hit you that hard, you don't remember.
One of them other boxers, now that was champion, he was a pretty good puncher. You know, he could work.
And Joe Lewis refereed about four of our matches. Joe and I. Yeah, and worked the angle. And then we hauled him around a little bit in the Carolinas too. But he was a nice guy.
A super nice man.
Sure was.
Eat
popcorn, pop pills.
Yeah, his wife ran the show, buddy. She's the one who gave all directions. She said, give him these pills certain time and blah, blah, blah. But he was a nice guy.
A very nice man.
But those are the type things that, you know, who else can say that were around him, you know?
That's true. Let me tell y'all something funny happened right quick. I know we're about through. One time we was in Montgomery, and we're talking about different people, like Andre the Giant and all. And Andre the Giant was there. Well, Buddy Wayne come in there when his kids were little then. And he come walking in the dressing room with his suitcase and just sat down across from Andre the Giant. He set his suitcase down and spoke to him and everything and just opened his suitcase up. But he opened the suitcase up, a little boy jumped out of it. And you could have heard Andre the Giant. Santa Claus couldn't laugh that loud. You could hear him laughing all over Montgomery, man.
That sounds like somebody Wayne would do.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we got about 2 minutes left, and I'm going to start winding it down. Bill and Joe, I can't thank you guys enough. This has been three great shows, and you guys are right. The two of you need to put your heads together and write all these stories down or record them or do something. Maybe get Scott Teal to do a shoot interview with you or something. It's just, I can't imagine. You guys have probably forgotten more than most people will ever know about this business, and I certainly do appreciate you guys giving us your time.
We ought to get him to write a book because we can make it X-rated. We can tell more stories than this.
we do appreciate it very much, so.
Thank you, we enjoy it.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, we love you guys. Well,
we will certainly do this again in the future, and get you guys back on here, give you guys a little break to gather up some more stories, and we'll get you back on. But we are winding down, so I appreciate it. Bobby and Jerry, I appreciate you guys as always. And
we'll see all y'all at the reunion.
All righty. Looking forward to it.
All right, guys.
Jerry, you coming this time?
I'm thinking about it.
I've got a car, so I'll come get you if I have to.
That'll work.
All right. All right, well, that's it, guys. And we will do this again next Thursday.
All righty, sounds good.
We'll take care,
guys.
Good night, guys.
All right, bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.